Thank you. Good morning, everyone. I'm going to be presenting part of a study that was conducted across the 10-state region of the Midwest as part of the Corn Systems CAP project, tagged sustainablecorn.org. So I'd like to start by thanking my colleagues and co-authors on this study, and particularly Sasha Kravchenko, who did all of the statistical analysis. So the overall goal of this large project was to look at adaptation and mitigation of our corn-based cropping systems to climate variations, with the goal basically of increasing the resiliency of our corn systems to climate variations and extremes. So what's the rationale for using cover crops as part of our goal of improving resilience? Well, it's basically to have something living and growing at the time of year that we typically don't have anything living and growing in our summer annual cropping systems, our corn and soybean-based cropping systems. So to have something living and capturing sunlight, photosynthesizing, feeding the soil organisms with root exudates, trapping nutrients that would otherwise be lost, and basically just making better use of the time and resources that we have available throughout the whole year rather than just a very limited time during our summer annual cropping system. So this particular project, the field research network spanned all of these states here in the Midwest. We had a number of different practices or systems that were being studied. What I'm talking about today is simply the cover crop portion of this larger study. And so for the cover crop portion, we had 10 field sites throughout the region, Iowa, Missouri, Ohio, Indiana, and Michigan. Because we wanted to have some amount of consistency across the region in the study, we chose one cover crop, and so we chose cereal rye, not because we necessarily think cereal rye is the best cover crop at any individual site, but we wanted to have the same cover crop across the region, and it's the most widely adaptable, can be planted later than just about anything else. It's the most winter hardy, and so that's the reason that we chose cereal rye for this particular study. Many of the individual researchers are also looking at other cover crops at other studies that they are conducting. So the site management did vary a bit across these 10 sites in the Midwest. We tried to make that as consistent as possible. So most sites did no-till drill the cereal rye cover crop after the corn and soybean harvest. I should say that all of these sites were in a corn-soybean rotation with both corn and soybeans each year. Several of the sites chisel plowed first before seeding their cover crop, and one site hand seeded broadcast into their standing crop. Spring termination was done at all sites with herbicide, and it was targeted at 2 weeks before corn planting. Some of the sites then before soybean planting allowed the cover crop to grow longer, generally 2 to 3 weeks longer, in order to produce more biomass and hopefully to have more of an impact on the soil properties. And so I'll be pointing out differences between what happens where we had the soybeans, where we had the cover crop terminated later. Cover crop biomass and the soil nitrate samples were taken in the spring right before the termination of that first termination timing. So the next three graphs are going to be of similar style, where we have basically on the left we've got sites with extended cereal rye growth before soybeans, okay, so after corn, before soybeans, and the numbers up here on the top of the graph basically show you how many sites had that system. Okay, so on the left, we've got the red bars are after corn or before soybeans, and the green bars are after soybeans or before corn. Biomass sampled in the spring. The red bars you can see because we allowed the cover crop to grow for an extra 2 or 3 weeks. Of course, we have significantly greater biomass produced in those plots than where we terminated the cover crop earlier. So that was across all 5 years. And you can see that we've got biomass values ranging anywhere from about 400 kilograms per hectare averaged across all the sites that did this up to about 2,000 kilograms per hectare when we allowed that crop to grow longer. On the right-hand side, again, the red and green bars indicating the after corn and after soybeans. You can see that most sites there was no difference in the amount of biomass produced when we terminated them at the same time. In 2012, the after soybeans did produce more biomass, probably because of the less residue, allowing for better and quicker establishment of the cover crop. So again, the bottom line is there's a wide range of biomass production, both based on year and on whether you allow it to grow longer or not. Okay, the next thing to look at is the quality of the biomass, meaning the nitrogen percent contained in that above-ground biomass. Again, on the left, we have the sites where there was an extended period of growth before soybeans or after corn. So the green bars, you can see, which is after soybeans before corn, got terminated earlier. So our nitrogen percents ranged between 3 and 3.5% nitrogen in that above ground biomass. When we allowed that cover crop to grow longer, the red bars, after corn, before soybeans, the nitrogen percent is lower, 2.5%, but certainly still very lush and in the vegetative stage. So that was consistent, as you would expect. As the plant gets older, the nitrogen percent declines. On the right-hand side was the sites that had rye terminated at the same time before corn and soybeans, and most of the time that nitrogen percent was not different between those two plots, after corn and after soybeans, with one exception. And basically, we were in the 2 to 2.5% range for those particular sites. You put those two things together to look at the total amount of nitrogen contained in the above-ground biomass, and the amount of biomass swamped out the small differences that were there for nitrogen percent. So again, on the left-hand side, the sites that had that extended rye growth period before soybeans, the red bars, showing much greater amount of nitrogen contained in the above-ground biomass than where the cover crop had been terminated 2 weeks earlier. So we're looking at nitrogen in the rye biomass up to almost 50 kilograms per hectare in 2013, where we had that extended growth period. So ranging from 15 to 45 kilograms per hectare nitrogen in the above ground biomass. On the right hand side, again, where those cover crops were terminated at the same time, again, with one exception in 2012, there was not a significant difference in the total amount of nitrogen contained in that above ground biomass. So just looking at kind of a range that we got across these sites and across these 5 years across this region, we're looking at somewhere between 10 and 45 kilograms per hectare. Where you terminate it early, 10 to 25 kilograms per hectare. Okay, the next series of graphs are going to look at nitrate. So we've taken nitrogen up into the biomass, and now we want to see what impact that had on soil nitrate concentrations. We took samples both in the spring and in the fall. In the spring, we did 0 to 30 and 30 to 60 centimeters. So now these graphs show you each year. And within each year, we have after corn and after soybeans. And the red and green here is, the red is no cover crop, no cereal rye, and the green is the cereal rye cover crop. You can see by our statistical stars up here that basically very consistently a reduction in nitrate concentration in the soil in that 0 to 30 centimeter depth across all years and across after corn and after soybeans by the presence of the cover crop. A few times were not statistically significant, but basically a very consistent effect, which is of course what we expect and what other people have found repeatedly, that where you have a cover crop growing, you have reduced your nitrate concentration. Again, to remind you, these were taken at the time of cover crop termination. So in most cases, this was in April. And so again, the cover crop has taken that nitrogen up, and it's going to reduce the potential for nitrate leaching. And then some of that nitrogen gets recycled at some later time, which we did not study in this study. At 30 to 60 centimeters, the same thing, a few less statistical significant comparisons. But again, the 30 to 60 centimeter depth where we had cereal rye cover crop, the green bars, had lower nitrate concentrations than where we had no cover crop, the red bars. Okay, let's take a look at so the spring was really expected. The fall, we did go down to 90 centimeters, And in the fall, these samples were taken a little bit more variable in time. Some of the sites took them before they even planted the cover crop. Others took them after they planted the cover crop, but there was hardly any growth. So with, I think, one exception in the whole study, these were taken before there would have been significant cover crop growth. You can see that we have some occasional significant effects, even though the cover crop was not yet growing very much, where the green bar here, the cereal rye cover crop, was significantly lower in nitrate concentration than where we had no cover crop. So there appears to be at least some kind of carryover effect of having that cover crop, having been growing in the spring, reducing that nitrate even the following fall. We found that at 0 to 30. We had, again, a few statistical significant comparisons in the 30 to 60 centimeter depth and the 60 to 90. So certainly not as ubiquitous as we had in the spring, but still some effects on some of our sites in some years. Okay, if we want to take a look at the bottom line for many farmers, of course, what impact did it have on crop yield? So on the left we have the corn yields and on the right the soybean yields. You can see that on our corn yields in 1 year, we had a significant, these are averaged across all 10 sites, we had a significant reduction in corn yield where we had cereal rye compared to where we didn't. I'm going to unpack that one a little bit more shortly. But in the other years, there was no significant difference between the corn and the soybean, between the rye and no rye yields. For soybean, no impact, positive or negative, of the cereal rye cover crop on the yields. I should have mentioned that 2011 for almost all of these sites was a baseline year. So what we're looking at is the effect of 1 year of cover crop, 2 years, 3 years, and 4 years. So the 2015 data would be after 4 years of cover crop treatments on the same plots at most of these sites. So putting some of the yield material into words, the soybean grain yield was basically not affected positively or negatively by the cereal rye cover crop, no matter how much rye growth we had. We had, again, a range of growth over those years, and regardless of the number of days that were between the time of termination and the time of planting. So one of our regional recommendations coming out of this study would be that soybean crops basically can be planted at any time, the same day as rye termination or at any time after termination without a detrimental impact on yields. Corn, on the other hand, was sometimes reduced by cereal rye cover crop, and really this was focused primarily in 1 year and a couple of sites. The greater rye biomass tended to be associated with greater yield reductions under some conditions. And those some conditions were colder, wetter, and less time between when you terminate the cover crop and when you plant the crop. And that's all consistent with the concepts of allelopathy, where if you have allelopathy, it's most likely to be more present where it's cold and wet and where you don't have much of a gap between when you've terminated and when you plant the cover crop. So recommendations coming out of that, again, are consistent with what many of us have already been kind of telling folks, that if you're going to manage cereal rye before corn, at least if you're not a super experienced person, we recommend that cereal rye cover crop be terminated at minimum of 2 weeks ahead. And when it's small, the Midwest Cover Crops Council recommends a target height of 6 to 8 inches. And what this does is it reduces the risk that you might have impacts of allelopathy or insects or nitrogen immobilization. And certainly using other planting and production techniques that help stimulate that early season growth with proper planter attachments, making sure that folks can deal with residues. And some states like Indiana do recommend putting a little bit more starter nitrogen on, kind of front-end loading the nitrogen. So bottom line from this study, as well as many other studies, cover crops may increase resilience, especially over the long term. They do pose some challenges and risks. There's a learning curve for farmers as well as for researchers, and greater management is needed. They do provide water quality benefits downstream, and we certainly, many of us, think that we need more research in our region as well as other regions to more fully utilize the potential benefits of cover crops. And so I will leave with just a few resources from the Midwest Cover Crops Council as an example. Thank you very much. Yes.
Eileen, I'm a little surprised you saw no yield hits at all when you let the rye grow right up to soybean planting. Did you have any dry springs in those 4 years?
2012 was extremely dry, but we saw no yield reduction. It was all terminated. How did we terminate the rye? The rye was all terminated with herbicide. So Roundup in most cases, and then possibly others. I mean, each site was a little different, but it was all herbicide. Yeah. Yes?
I'm wondering if you have direct evidence of allele apathy. So in Pennsylvania, where I work, we've got a lot of farmers who are planting green and going into a living dry cover crop much larger than those and not having, I mean, they're having success. So do you have a direct evidence that that's what's going on, or could there be other factors that are explaining?
Right. Question is whether we have direct evidence that allele apathy is occurring. No. We're simply saying that, you know, allele apathy is one of those things that, you know, it's kind of everything that we don't understand kind of goes into there. So I know that there's a lot of success with some farmers with planting green, and that's why I couched this with saying that for people who are just starting out, that's at least not what I would personally recommend to them. But no, we don't have. That was not the focus of the study. Yeah.